Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Dirt Talk. This one is very exciting. They're all very exciting, but this one is different. I do have a guest, so it's not different in that way, but it's different because I did this one out in the field. So I'm recording this intro back in my home studio, which is a spare bedroom, and I'm going to put it in front of the interview I did with Mr. Brett Baker. He's a superintendent foreman. He didn't really, we talk about that. He manages a large project right now for Rosso Constructors in Tennessee. And since the beginning of all this, I've wanted to interview people out in the field because I hear some crazy stories. And I interview owners, management, that kind of thing, because that's what I love. And this is a very much a selfish endeavor for me. But I know that there's a ton of value in hearing from the folks out in the field actually doing the work as well. So with that said, I hope you enjoy my interview with Mr. Brett Baker. Here we go. Okay, I am with Mr. Brett Baker. What do you do here? What's your title?
I guess I'm like a foreman or a site superintendent, if you want to call it that.
Site superintendent? Yeah. That sounds fancier than foreman.
It's just basically a foreman glorified, where you got to keep up with all the subs and all the guys and more foremen, you know. So it's like a glorified foreman, I guess.
Yeah. Well, and how old are you?
I'm 24.
24? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you're younger. I forget you're younger than me.
Yeah, I'll be 25 in June, so I got like 6 more months, man.
Fuck.
Yeah. Yeah.
How'd you get into all this?
So basically, man, whenever I was like 16, I worked for my stepdad on a construction crew, and we were building roads at the time for a big company in Tennessee, and we pretty much, I hired in as a laborer, begged him for a job for like a year, and finally got a summer gig where I could work all summer and shovel curb, and it sucked, but it taught me a lot, really, in the end. So.
And that was when you were 16?
I was 16, yeah.
Shit. Also, I just want to make a note, too. I'm sitting here with Brett in my pickup truck. We are, this is the very first, I don't know, site dirt talk. I've been getting yelled at because I just have owners of companies on my podcast, but I thought I'd get some normal people, too.
Sure.
And Brett's pretty normal.
Yeah, pretty normal. I'm redneck.
I wouldn't say you're normal, but.
Yeah, just a little redneck from West Tennessee. But that's all, man.
Wasn't there some nursing involved?
So, yeah, pretty much whenever I started doing summer work with my stepdad, right, on the road crew and stuff, I started making money, and basically I was paying for my college. So I started school and didn't really know what I wanted to be, and I thought nursing was my call, man, and this big, broad guy decides to go to nursing school, and it actually went well, man, and I was within 2 semesters of finishing with a BSN.
No
kidding.
So
I was going to be a fully licensed bachelor of science nurse, you know, and I had my son. And when I had my son, I kind of wanted to make a bigger jump as what I was fixing to do. And at the time, I was like, well, I need to work and maybe let his mom graduate. So I decided, you know, I'll just go back to work.
So you just dropped out of nursing school?
So I just dropped out of nursing school, left it where I was at, man, and come back to the road crew.
Dude, nursing school is not easy either.
No, it was very hard.
No.
Very hard.
I dated a girl that was a nurse for a while, and it's pretty brutal.
Oh, it's rough. Yeah. It's rough. Nursing school, I would say, would probably be the hardest bachelor's degree that you could try to go get.
I'd say so.
Yeah, for a bachelor level degree, it was tough.
How did you even end up choosing nursing?
Man, my brother was born without a kidney, and the other one was reflux, man, pretty much had a lot of health complications all of his life growing up. So I was able to watch what everybody did for him, and that's kind of put me where I wanted to be. I thought I wanted to help people in the nursing setting, and I did for a while, but I just figured out, man, that's not my calling anymore. I wanted to come back out here, move dirt and rock, and be somebody was my idea.
What about dirt gets you going?
Dude, everything about dirt gets me going. Yeah. If I can have trucks banging in and out in a minute, you know, 40-ton trucks with 336, and you're moving 5,000 yards a day with 2 trucks in a hole, you know, just on a site job. We're not a mining group. We're a grading group, and that's completely different. People don't understand that, you know, but it just gets me going just having everything come together and making a difference, really.
Well, you guys aren't banging trucks out today.
No, it's wet. It's wet.
So that's why we're talking right now.
It's wet, like 10 inches of rain in 5 days. So,
Jesus.
Yeah.
So you, how old were you when you had your kid?
So I was, the day before I turned 21, my son was born.
No
and,
kidding.
And that was whenever I made the jump. I was still in school. Even when my son was born, I kept going to school, you know, and I was going to finish out the semester, you know. So
really?
After I finished out that semester, I went to the instructor and the director, and I was like, you know, I'm going to take a break for a while. And they said, how long? And I said, well, I think I'm going back to the road, and I think I need to make some money right now for my son. And I did that. And I did that. But the thing was is I found out my calling wasn't in the hospital setting anymore. So
did you regret going to nursing school?
No, like, no. I don't regret college, but I also don't think it's a necessity into what you need to do.
Yeah.
Because I was around some of the best in the grading world, in my opinion, as to what we had. And I was lucky enough, my stepdad was one of the best. And I just took everything that they said and just ran with it. As far as I could go, if I messed up, it was 100 mile an hour. So I just kept going as far as I could go with it. And I don't regret it at all. I love it now. So
that's, there's a 336 with a hammer tracking right past us. I was hoping to get out of the way of some of the noise here, but yet they find me every time. I don't know if it's like this for you, but I have an amazing ability of parking in the way.
Oh.
So I'll park my pickup truck in the corner of the site, and I'll sit there and say, there's no way in hell this will ever be in the way. And 5 minutes later, someone's, hey, can you move your damn truck?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like a geotech, man. Yeah, they park right in the way.
Yeah. Whenever you get a company truck, you're toast. So you're at Rosso now. How'd you get to Rosso?
Man, I worked for a big contractor, and I was on an interstate job, and we were working like 30 hours. I mean, we were working all night long, setting 4,000 or 5,000 foot of barrier rail at night, and then stripping topsoil during the day. And after working every Saturday for so long and missing a lot of my son's early years, man, my stepdad made a jump and come to Rosso at the time. And I told him, you know, I think about it, but he told me, you know, if you just come down here, it's the right time to get here. We're fixing to blow up. And he was right. I come down here and blew up, and I've had a lot of success with this company. They're awesome.
How long ago was that?
That was almost 3 years ago.
Oh, so you've been here a while.
So I've been here a little while. I'm employee number 31, so, and we have like almost 300 now. So.
Yeah, you've seen this company grow.
Yeah. It's awesome. What Dylan done with it, man, it was slow for him, I think, in the beginning, but in the last 3 or 4 years, this place has just exploded with work.
Well, it takes a long time to build what he's built because he hasn't done with any partners or anything.
Right.
So he's just had to do it all himself. Yeah,
it's just him. So my respect for him is that he knows how to do it all.
Yeah.
He's built the jobs. Yeah. He's bid the jobs. He's, you know, been one of us out here. So that's where a lot of that respect comes from.
Yeah. Going back to the like, having a kid so early, did that scare the shit out of you?
Oh, definitely, man. Definitely. You know, if you would have asked me when I was 18 if I would have had a kid at 20 or 21, I'd be like, dude, no, I'm like 30 maybe. I'll get married or one of these days. But I got lucky, man. It was one of the biggest blessings to me, and it helped me grow up, really, because I needed that at that time in my life because I was an operator at the time.
We were just talking about that like an hour ago when I was out there.
Oh, man, whenever I was an operator, I don't know if I could – I don't know if I'd work for myself. I'd probably be toast if I did.
Yeah, some of these boys, they mess around a little bit.
Oh, they do. They do. But I'll tell you, man, if you can get a bunch of guys that can just work and that are willing to show up, tell you they don't know anything and that they're willing to learn, I would rather have that, you know, every day, because they're going to learn as long as they're hard workers, you know.
Yeah. Going to that, you don't necessarily need someone with experience as long as they're just ready to show up and get
not at all it. Not at all. I've got like 2 or 3 guys now that only been here like 3 months, and exponentially growth with those guys, so they're awesome now.
Have you ever had any problems with your age as far as leading older guys?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
getting respect out of 40 and 50 year olds when you're like 21 and you just made foreman on this big construction site on the interstate, and you're telling them what to do, and they're questioning everything you say, and hell, sometimes you're questioning yourself, but you're still running with it no matter what you did, you know. So at the time I was listening to them, but I also had a lot of trouble with the guys even working with me. But I just lead by example. I'd get in the ditch, I'd lay the pipe, I'd jump on the machine, and it helped.
That's what I don't have a whole lot of management experience in the field, but that's what I have told everybody is the quickest way to earn respect is just to get in the ditch.
That's it.
Grab a shovel and get after it. as hard as anyone else.
Outwork them.
Yeah. Outwork them. Especially if you outwork them. Yeah.
Oh, man. And whenever I first started, that was what it was all about. It was, I would get stuff done on a rain day and run back to the boss and be like, hey, man, I'm done. What do you want me to do next? And he's like, you never heard what 8 hours is? You know?
Some of these kids, they'll get some construction management degree, get a company pickup truck, and then just hang out in the pickup truck and think that's their job. It's
that's not it.
That's not how it works.
Not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Yeah. Don't expect any kind of respect if that's what you're doing.
No, not at all. Yeah. Not at all. So I always lead by example. You're either standing on the wagon or in front of the wagon. I'm in front of the wagon.
Nothing wrong with that. So what can we go to your day to day? Like, what does a typical day out here look like?
So for me, man, a lot of my planning comes in the mornings. I always stay a couple weeks in advance of my planning. Mm-hmm. But really, you look at your condition of your site every morning. So I get here an hour to 30 minutes early every morning. A lot of times looking at the plans, making a plan for what I'm fixing to do, whether I'm laying storm or grading or something like that, and getting an idea of who I'm going to have there. You know, I may have a guy or two that's out, you know, this COVID and stuff going on. So trying to schedule around everything that's going on and putting people in the right places to get it done is kind of what I do a lot in the mornings, and which we have our safety meeting 6 to 6:30, and after 6:30, man, I just take my plan that I had that morning and kind of just stick everybody where I want them. Sometimes I'm shorthanded, sometimes I'm not, you know, but I go with it every time. I plan 2 weeks in advance, and every morning I just make my mind up whether I'm fixing to lay pipe all day or whether I'm fixing to grade. You never know in Tennessee. So.
Well, yeah, and even you can have your beautiful plan, but day to day it changes.
Every day.
Yeah.
Every day.
It never goes to plan.
Every day.
Yeah.
So, that's a big struggle, especially where we're at because of the rain and stuff. But but we make it work. I mean, we're going to dry up fields and we're going to haul dirt no matter what.
Yeah. It's a good mentality. And like I've talked to owners about that, like, no one cares if you guys, they just want the job done.
That's it.
And all the equipment, like, they're still expecting their payments and all the vendors are like, everyone's still looking, all these guys are looking to get their paychecks. Yeah. So they don't care. They just got to get it done.
It's my job to make productivity and make sure that my guys are well taken care of. If my guys are not well taken care of, I can't get a productivity for them. So,
can you explain how bad rain screws you up?
I'll just tell you, in February this year, we had 30 inches.
Oh,
so in the winter and the fall, it's horrible. You get all your good work in the spring and in the summer. So we try to bang it out as hard as we can in the summer. But when the fall hits, we know that once October and September and all that kind of rolls in, we're fixing to get rain and we're going to have to bust it out. So that's just part of where we're at, man.
And you've been on this site, you've been fighting with Geotech a little bit as far as your moisture content.
Oh, man, you can haul dirt all day long and like move 5,000 yards, but the next day you go down there and do a Newt test and you're 18%, and he's looking for a 14%. He's not letting it go. So then you're ripping up fields and trying to get it dried out as quick as you can go. But the material's beautiful. It holds up well. It's just moisture, man, 15-foot cuts.
Well, and that's the complexity of site work, too.
That's it.
Like today, you could be moving dirt. Like, it's not too muddy to just not be moving dirt,
right,
but it's too muddy to compact it.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's
and you'll just get failed. So
I can move it, but I would tear up more than what I could fix in a day's time, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's the sun's shining right now, and yet you have trucks sitting. Just because it's like, well, can't do anything with them.
Is it sad? I got a D8, a 336, and two 745s.
It's a little sad. I might hop on the D8 after this.
That's
though.
Fine. Go ahead. We need some of this water chased out. So.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I can hit the ground with the blade, but I'll get it.
I always say that if you use that bubble in your ass, you'll figure it out. So,
can you explain the safety thing? Because I was here a few weeks ago, and you guys actually had a pretty good safety discussion. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you get these guys to understand safety?
Man, I tell you.
Because it really, like, the companies love to talk about their safety plan. Yeah. It's like, great, you have your fucking safety plan. It's all pretty, and you have your software and this and that. But this is where it actually happens.
Where I think a lot of people lose sight of safety is they're not listening to their guys.
Yeah.
They're looking at it from kind of like an objective view. And they're not listening to their guys, the guys that are in the ditch or the guys that's in the dozer, the guy that's in the hoe. My biggest deal is take our toolbox talks, talk about them. But when you get done talking about them, ask these guys what they're seeing and take their point of view. Because the guys that I have now, man, they'll tell me what they see going on. And it's not snitching or anything like that. It's just telling me what they're having problems with and what's going on. You know, it could have been, you know, just as simple as it's wet and you could slip off in a trench. You know, I mean, that's fine. That's what I want to know, you know, what you're seeing down there. So I pretty much take our safety plan that we have, talk about it with the guys, explain to them what I want, and have them look out for hazards all day long. And every morning we talk about those. So I really put a lot of it in their hands, I guess. I manage it, but I put a lot of the safety in their hands, and you'll hear them get after each other when it's not safe. So,
well, that's what it should be. I someone just asked me the other day, you know, what do you see with these other companies? And I said the best companies, their safety programs, everyone's involved.
That's
it. But sometimes you'll cringe a little bit when it's one dude, like, preaching off the corporate, you know, guidelines, and that's the safety meeting. They call that a safety meeting. It's like, no, it's not a safety meeting at all. Everyone has to be involved.
The company I work for, it was that way.
Yeah.
It was all manager driven, and the guys had no say, and which at the time it hurt. I mean, we had a lot of accidents back then, and now I'm very blessed, but knock on wood, we don't have near as many accidents now.
Yeah.
You can add this in the video or not, but you can tell Tony Strong that I'm still ahead of him. I don't have any accidents. So.
Well, I just liked how you went around the circle. It was like 15 guys. It was a good group.
Yeah.
And every single one of them had to talk about a specific hazard and how they're mitigating it.
Every day.
Yeah.
Every day.
And that's another thing. It has to be every day.
Every day.
Yeah.
Remind them. It sounds like a broken record, but I got them to now where they'll call out what they see and actually call out people. Now, it may offend somebody.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, if that was a problem, let's get it corrected and let's go forward. Call it out when you see it, you know? So.
Well, it's better to get someone bent out of shape than hurt.
Right.
I mean, if you want, maybe their feelings will be hurt for 15 minutes, but hey, like, hold them accountable.
That's it.
It's better than, missing work. And
I tell them safety's number one, production's number two, and number three that we all get pay raises because we did so good on the job. So I keep telling them, don't tear up anything and keep doing everything right, and money will come, you know.
What do you have to think about when training up some of these new guys? I mean, how do you look after, like, a guy that's never been on site before coming your way? Because that happens. It happens a lot around here.
Yeah.
They give a lot of younger people shots, Rosso. Yes. Mm-hmm. So how do you instill that safety mentality in a guy that's never been around it before?
I pretty much, the safety meetings that we have helps get them started.
Yeah.
And then when I do that, I take them with a seasoned guy or just me, and I take them whether we're just walking the site and talking about things that you need to watch for. But I'll do that with them for, you know, an hour or so, and then I turn them loose with one of my seasoned guys.
Yeah.
And I say, mirror this guy today. Do whatever he's got to do. He's going to show you everything that's going on. I've got three or four guys out here, man, that are just good as gold. Now, they may not be the most productive, but they've been on sites for forever, and they know everything that's going on. So, you know, just a big shout-out to Easy over there. You know, he's been here 3 years.
Yeah, he's the man. Yeah.
3 years. Yeah. And when I got a new guy, he's a little rough on him, but he's the right one to stick him with because he's going to make sure that they do right.
Sometimes you need that. You need those older guys that they're you don't get their respect very easily, but they'll teach you if you're willing to learn.
That's it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. I those are probably the guys I've learned the most from.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's where I learned everything from was these old guys, because they're dying out, you know. And I'd like to say that I'm a little new school, you know, to their old school, but the thing is it's all got the same principles behind it.
Same principles. And you can't. You have to have thick skin with those guys, too.
Oh, yeah.
And especially if they're giving you shit and making fun of you, that means that's a good thing. You want that.
Yeah, it happens every day.
Yeah, if they're just looking at you like they're pissed off, that's not good. You don't want that.
That's it.
Yeah.
But I don't know. We grow respect. Yeah. It's a big respect. You know, I'll try to lead by example, and those guys try to, you know, they teach me things. Whether I know something that they don't or they know something that I don't, I always take their opinion. I'm not the type that's going to trump everything that everybody says. I want to know what you know. You know, tell me what you know. I can shoot storm boxes in faster than anybody I ever met, and half these guys don't know that. I make it easy. Trust the stake till the stake proves you wrong, you know. Uh-huh. So that's one big thing that I'd say I teach a lot of these old guys, because, it's elevation, elevation, elevation. Well, that's true. But that surveyor, he's got a job, and you trust his stake until that stake proves you wrong. So double check it before you ever make the first bucket, you know.
Well, the plans ain't always right.
No, percentages. Yeah. You know, engineers love percentages. And They're never close.
No, I went to engineering school. I saw the how the sausage is made, and it's a lot of guessing.
Right, yeah, right, yeah. Whatever I was estimating, I got a kick out of a lot of times. You'd be looking through all those plans, and you see some of those percentages. You look at top of cast to invert, and you're like, no, that's not happening.
Yeah, if you're standing right there, you could have been like, yeah, you idiot. Yeah. This isn't going to work. Yeah. Are you kidding me?
Absolutely. But now it's all in the engineer. So.
Yeah. And you need them to build
a job. You got to.
You don't want to be the one calculating water flow. And
I don't want to be the one hung for all the problems, really. Yeah, I'm going to build it per plan, and you let them deal with all the design, you know.
As far as estimating goes, because you spent about a year in the estimating office.
Yeah.
How did that change how you build a job?
Oh, completely, dude. So I see a lot of foremans, all right? You see a lot of these foremans or even superintendents that never really estimated, or some companies hide that information from you, right?
Oh, most of them do.
Right.
Yeah, and it drives me nuts.
So this is what's crazy. Say you're moving dirt, right? You got a dozer in the cut, and you know, got a dozer in the field, and you're running trucks. How much does that dozer in the cut really need to run? Yeah. If you got a 10-foot cut, how much does that dozer really need to run?
Yeah.
You know, does it need to run all day? Not really. So I tell you what it taught me was, back in the day, I'd run everything. Put every machine out there, run it no matter what, and not know what I had in anything. Mm-hmm. So after estimating, I was able to take what I knew what I had in something. And whenever I come out to the job, I knew, hey, I'm going to cut that dozer off and make a little bit of money off of it. You know, maybe I'm only going to run it 2 or 3 hours. Because some of these companies, when they crank their machine, it's on.
Mm-hmm.
Not us.
Yeah.
My field dozer, I'm liable to dump 10 or 20 loads before I knock down a load. And people say, how do you do that? And I'm saving hours. You know, at the end of the day, that D8's expensive to run.
Yeah. Well, but a lot of people, they make the mistake of, if they see the machine running, they think they're making money.
And they're not.
And it's not that way. No.
They're not. Yeah. You know, if there's not a load of dirt moved and they're running that D8, they're losing money no matter what you do. So.
Well, and the funny thing with moving dirt is, like, you're only paid to move it once.
That's it.
So you're pushing it back and forth.
That's it.
You're not making any money on
that.
That's
it.
Yeah.
That's it. And, you know, the way you estimate things versus the way you actually build them are completely different.
Mm-hmm.
Just for this instance, you know, we bid this thing for stripping topsoil 6 inches all over this thing. I know we did. I was helping bid on it. And, man, there was topsoil out here 40 foot deep.
Yeah.
There were stockpiles out here. So then when you get out here and you see the ground you got and you're like, I want to help out this owner. I want to help out this good, you know, this guy we're working for. And what are we going to do? And, well, we went over on our topsoil a little bit. Well, that's fine. Let's make sure we're going to figure it out. Because a model in the office and what goes on in a job are completely different. And that's a big thing.
Well, but before your estimate experience, you were probably looking at it like, this motherfucker.
That's
like, looking at the cost, like, what the hell did he do here?
They have lost their fucking
mind. And then now you know you're basically just guessing the entire estimating process and just making it up.
I tell you, sometimes you'll regret, like with this job, you know, a pipe was going into the ground pretty fast, you know, like 180, 200 foot a day, you know, and I get out here and hit rock. We're laying like 120 foot a day and you're like, oh shit, something's going wrong. Yeah. I've done it wrong. But you know, if you save on your trench blasting and you play your cards right, you can make it balance out well. So that's what we hope for. And at the end, we'll figure it out. And every month we just keep a good pace on it and then track it as we go. So,
well, and you don't need to win on every cost code either.
No.
You just need to win.
No,
bottom line. Yeah.
Win overall. You know, my biggest deal is to put out a good product in a very productive time frame. And if I can do that every time, then I'm happy. And my guys get a full week. I'm big on my guys.
Yeah.
I'd say going from estimating back to the field, my biggest thing now is taking care of my help. But because before I worked for a big company, you just hired more people and you hired more people. And to be honest, the people are dying out.
Yeah.
This is a dying breed. I'd rather go to high school graduation and hire them now than to even pick up a 50-year-old that's scared to grab a shovel at the end of the day.
No, so. I agree. Yeah. And you know, you might be able to lay pipe quicker than anyone, but you sure as shit couldn't do anything on your own.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And we're very blessed, man. We have Dylan's kept us with the best equipment and stuff like that. Yeah. So these guys, as long as I keep them under my wing and tell them, if you take care of me, I'll take care of you and take care of this machines. We'll keep getting nice machines, and which I don't tell them that all of our machines are nice. I just tell them that we'll get the crappier ones if y'all don't take care of them.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But they're all really nice. So.
Yeah, I think there's one turd in the fleet. It's that old D6.
The old 6R.
Old 6R. But it's still a very nice machine.
That's where I learned them, man.
Yeah.
It was just the old beat-up dozer, and you jack off the blade all day long. I don't want to – it sounds kind of bad, but – that's what you do, and that, that teaches you so much more, man. I run a slope with a D5M whenever I kind of first started, and it had a little fingertip steer controls. And if anybody knows anything about the dozers, when you barely pull one of those fingertip controls, it like goes into free spin. So if you're on a steep slope, you'll spin to the bottom of it. I mean, just circles all the way to the bottom. And that's what I kind of learned on was that stuff. And it was rough, but it helped me now. So now whenever I get on a 6K or 6N or 8T or something, I got so much more respect for that machine because it's so much better than what I started with. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Now going to Dylan and Rosso, there's a not too long ago where you thought the grass was greener.
I did.
And
I did.
So you left the company.
I did.
And then you came back to the company.
I did.
Not long after that.
I did. So I did. About
what'd
two
you learn?
About two phone calls with Dylan Stevens, I figured it out that I may have made a bad decision. At the time, I got a little overwhelmed with what was all going on. I had a lot of work. We had a lot of work going on. We didn't have enough guys. And at the time, I didn't realize that. I was just trying to make the next step.
Yeah.
And they were trying to hire more guys. And I was kind of like the same thing I am now, like a site superintendent. Just deal with subs and some foremans that come work for you and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And, so we were out there on a job, and I get a phone call, and Keith's like, hey, you know, we're fixing to add these other couple jobs. We need to get some guys out there. And I was like, okay. I'll get these jobs going. No matter what, I'll get these guys out there. And what I learned was, like, I didn't have enough managers. I just had operators. Mm-hmm. And I just had operators everywhere. And I didn't have enough managers. I got really overwhelmed and kind of got behind and started hating my job because I was stressed all the time, working 6 days a week when I thought I was only going to work five. And
yeah.
I pretty much just got overwhelmed and didn't tell anybody anything until it was too late. And by the time it was too late, I was ready to jump. So I jumped.
Dude, and that's – I talk about our people all the time, like, hey, if you're frustrated about something, let's just talk about it. Because, like, most people that leave companies, like, it could have been fixed if you would have talked about it.
Every time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially when it's good help.
Yeah.
So my fault in that was I should have took a vacation and I should have went and talked to my, you know, talked to Dylan or talked to Keith about that kind of stuff that was going on at that time. I needed a vacation real bad. So pretty much I went to the house, man, for a couple of weeks. I had another job lined up, which I figured out that a lot of these owners are crooked as shit.
Oh, yeah.
So one of that guys started crawfishing like hell, and that was cool because at the time I really wasn't feeling it neither. So I got out of that situation and pretty much went and helped this guy do some heavy equipment work back home for a few weeks. And I think Dylan called once. I talked to him, and I think he called again on a second phone call, whatever I talked to him. I was like, yeah, I'll be back. What you want me to do? I think I even called him one day. I can run the dozer. You know, I was just, I'll just do anything that you want me to do. So, no, he was great to me. I come back, and it wasn't just a few months. He stuck me in the office estimating, and that was awesome, too, just having that experience. So,
what's your advice to young bucks? I think the grass is greener somewhere else.
Man, talk to people about your problems. You know, if it's money, talk to them, because a lot of people won't even talk about money. You know, I can understand when I first come to this company, I about missed a house payment.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, I got to go back to where I was at. I hated where I was at. And I talked about it, and the money was fine. The money came. So it was just me avoiding, you know, those situations is where I went wrong. So if I had to give some advice to everybody is, talk about your problems to everybody that's going on. Maybe I can help you. Maybe I can't. But I'm not going to stop you from bettering yourself. I want you to better yourself here. But if you can't, I understand.
Well, and you have to take responsibility for yourself, too.
Yes.
And it's like a lot of times, I mean, should people kind of, maybe something's up. Like, ideally, they would be like, hey, what's up? Sure. What's going on? That doesn't really happen, though. Like, you're the one that has to say, hey, there's a problem here.
Yes.
I need to do something about it.
Absolutely.
And if you don't do that, then don't expect anything to change.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah, I struggle with that with a lot of guys. You know, some of these guys come in and swear they know everything, and you find out real quick, you know, they don't know everything.
They're the ones you got to look out for.
They're the ones you got to watch out for. But I'd say for the most part, we get a lot of guys that have come out here, if they don't know something, they'll tell you. And I like to know that so I can teach them the way we do things.
Yeah. You know? Now you said, you know, going home, you live quite a ways away from here.
Yeah, a couple hours away, about 150 miles from where we're sitting.
And so you stay here during the week.
Yeah.
And you go home on the weekends.
I was very blessed that Dylan's made it where I could stay up here, and that helped a lot. It hurts being away from family. I wish we had a lot of work in West Tennessee, and even whenever I was estimating a lot of stuff in West Tennessee, but I was just trying my best to get closer to home. But I've got a camper out there, and I stay in a camper out in Bradyville, so it's kind of close to Murfreesboro, and yeah, we stay out there, and I just work up here all week and just make it work that way. So I'm very blessed that he takes care of me that way. So
yeah, and how have you been able to balance that, you know, going away for work versus family? Because it does wear on you.
Oh, it wears on you. But I tell you, with the weekends, the way we do things around here, mm-hmm. if you can't get productivity on a Saturday, why do we do it?
Yeah.
So most Saturdays we don't work.
Yeah.
So having that whole weekend time to go home helps a lot. So going home seeing my son's my number one thing. I've got a grandmother that's 86-year-old, and I got a grandfather that's 87-year-old, and the other two are not far behind them. So
yeah.
Just being able to go home and spend time with the family that you have left with them, because I was raised, you know, my parents worked all the time. We didn't have much but a pot to piss in whenever we grew up.
Yeah.
But my grandparents, I spent a lot of time with them, and now they're getting old and they're dying off, and I got a son that I want him to know their great-grandparents. And so just kind of balancing that work-life ratio and understanding that you know, you don't live to work. You work to live.
Mm-hmm.
And Dylan's whole motto on that is what I really like, is that he talks about how you need that time with your family first.
Yep.
And work comes second, you know, so it just always helps.
Well, and he, like, we've talked at length about that because he's built that into this company.
Yeah.
And, man, he's with his family all the damn time.
All the time.
He prioritizes his family. He's like, I want everyone else to live like this too.
He's the best manager. You look at how he structures his company and he puts people in the right places.
Yeah.
Just because I'm not estimating now, that was smart on his part.
Yeah.
He knew that I was better at building jobs.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? And it didn't hurt my feelings at all. It would have hurt my feelings if they fired me, but they didn't fire me.
Yeah.
It was like, go back to the job. I was like, hell yes.
Yeah.
I'm back at home out here, man. You know, I'm redneck as hell. All I want to do is run equipment and make shit happen. So,
yeah. But you learned what you needed to learn.
I learned what I needed to learn. Yeah. Bad. I needed to know that. And I'm able to share that now going forward. So a lot of times these guys out here ask, why do we do it like this? Why can't we just go grab this machine and do this? And I'll say, we don't have money in it.
Mm-hmm.
Simple as that. We don't have money in it. Let's do it how we have money in it. It may take us a little longer, but I promise you, versus cranking that other machine and coming down here and try to double up on everything, we're going to spend way more, you know?
Yeah. Well, you now understand the big picture.
That's it.
Rather than just what's right in front of you.
I thought that everybody in the office didn't do anything, to be honest.
Yeah.
I thought that they all sat in there on their computers, but whenever I was putting 15 hours on a computer every day while I was in there, I was like, nope.
Even 8 hours in office like 15 in the field.
Rough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I looking at ag tech for 8 hours.
Oh, and you know everybody in the field.
God help me.
Oh, those guys in the office, they don't know nothing, blah, blah, blah,
yeah.
blah. I'll tell you, when you go to modeling and trying to phase a job based off of it, now, I had a little help because I come from the field. I was able to kind of use that.
Yeah,
not everybody has that,
yeah.
and that hurts a little bit. But if you could be somebody that knows something that's going on, it's like the estimators we had. I was able to tell them a little bit of my experience, and they were able to tell me a lot of their software experience that I was lost as hell with that I was able to pick up, like AgTech. AgTech is rough. I don't care who you are.
I don't think I ever figured it out.
Well,
I used it for 2 years.
I love vectorization. Use vectorization as much as you can and learn the F keys. If you're doing ag tech, learn the F keys. You figure those out, you'll be all right.
It is funny, the us versus them mentality, though, of the office folk versus the field folk. Because like, you know, you guys in the field are here because of the office people.
That's it.
And like,
you
like getting a paycheck.
You
can't work without one another.
It doesn't.
Like, that mentality doesn't serve anybody.
Not at all.
So it's like, you like getting a paycheck every week?
You've got to have.
How do you think that happens?
Well, overhead is something that's going to come with growth.
Yeah, you know? I've been learning that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. You're backed up. But I'll tell you, it's putting the right people in the right places. You know, I think our office got a lot of people that's in the right places.
Yeah.
So, and that helps. And in the field, I don't have a doubt in my mind, most of these people are in the right places. Now, some of these operators are going to move up quick. I've got two or three right now that'll probably move up in the next year. Is it going to be sad whenever my crew is kind of down and out? But you know, it's no big deal. At the end of the day, I want people to move up and get better. So
not everyone wants to move up either. I've realized not everyone has, like, I have the mentality of, all right, what's next and some people just want to run a dozer.
That's it.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest with you, man, if you like running a dozer, do it.
It's a good gig.
Do
yeah.
it. I'm a dozer man. That's,
yeah.
I'll just tell you, my cousin that's my operator, you do a lot of shout-outs for, Dylan McBride, man.
Yeah.
He can bang them out on a Traco. I put him up against anybody.
Oh, man.
I can't run a Traco like he can, but I'll smoke him in a dozer every time.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's just having everybody's own niche, you know? So.
He can move dirt.
We load those 745s in about 55 seconds.
Yeah, with a 336.
With a 336.
Yeah,
You know how many buckets that is? I don't know. I lost count.
I don't know. Probably six. Five or six.
Nine buckets. 55 seconds.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Yeah. That's less than 10 seconds a bucket.
No, he moves.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good. But he knows how to do it. We learn from, Keith McBride, him being in our lives all our life.
Yeah.
He stayed on top of us. And even to this day is really rough with us. Not like, just all the time into us, but he's all the time pointing out the flaws.
Yeah.
And that helps so much. You know, loading trucks. You know, a lot of people say they drive by load and outload you, but I'll just tell you, we back trucks in and I'll smoke you.
Mm.
You know, we just back trucks in. And with our dozers, we run in first gear. You don't even need second gear. And people are like, what? You don't run dozers in second gear? It's like, by the time you put two undercarriages on yours, I only have one on mine. And we'll see who spends the most money by the time we get to the end.
And again, big picture, they don't even understand that an undercarriage costs money.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I don't even know how much it costs for that eight, but I know it's high.
It ain't cheap. Yeah.
No, it's not cheap. It's not cheap. So.
Yep.
But no, it helps a lot. Surrounding yourself with people that are really good.
Yeah.
And I was lucky enough to, my stepdad was amazing. He was general superintendent at a big company, and even here he's vice president over operations. And every day I learn something new from him. But one of these days I'm going to teach him a little of the new school, and he'll get away from that old school stuff. But
I think you need to balance the two. Because I think next generation, they do have some things to teach the older guys, especially like I know you guys use a lot of software.
Oh, man, absolutely.
It doesn't make your job easier?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We've got the AgTech that you can walk around on the job and see. I forgot what it is, AgTech 3D. There's Access.
Yeah.
What it's called, Access.
Yeah.
You can go out with an iPad on the job and pretty much see everywhere you're at, you know?
Yeah. So. But you use the heavy job quite a bit.
Oh, love heavy job.
Yeah.
Love heavy job. Cost analysis and tracking all that stuff. If any companies are not using it and they're going by paper, they're messing up already. You need to know that stuff every day because we catch it quick. You know, if we laid 50 foot of pipe and we had six guys on a pipe crew, it's like, whoa, six guys on a pipe crew, too many. We only laid 50 foot. What was wrong? Let's fix it now.
Yeah.
Instead of going all week laying 50 foot every day and having too many people and figuring it out a week later.
Well, and a lot of companies, they do it, you know, and they'll leave it up to the office to figure that out. Well, the productions are way off this week, and then they adjust. They don't give the data to the people in the field and allow them to make the decisions themselves.
Sure.
Yeah.
So we capitalize on that every day.
Yeah.
Now, after 10 inches of rain, you're not really going to make just a whole lot of money coming out of the start, you know, but as long as you grab that and you take off with it and try to do whatever you can do to try to make it back up, it works. That heavy job, having it, working on it every evening, you know, turning in time and doing analysis on everything that you're doing and even planning ahead. You can plan a day ahead and estimate what you're going to have in it, you know, and figure out if you're going to make money or lose money. So,
but even, and even if you know you're going to lose money in a day, you might keep guys on to give them hours.
That's it.
Because again, big picture. Yeah. You want to take care of them.
Yeah.
And then when it does count, they're going to produce for
you. That's
it.
That's it. I'm going to take care of them when it's slow and they'll take care of me when it's fast.
Yeah.
So. I stay after them. My biggest thing, I would say, take care of your guys, number one, but know when to be a manager. You know, a lot of the old school says, don't even talk to your guys. I disagree.
Yeah.
If Keith was sitting here right now, he'd be mad about it. But I'll just tell you, if you don't get some camaraderie in your crew, then you're not going to have a crew.
Yeah.
You're going to go through guys. So.
It's a balance. You do have to be an asshole every once in a while.
Sure.
You know? Hold the line and you know, this is where we need to be, guys.
Yeah.
Here's the standards.
That's it.
But you don't have to be an asshole all the time.
Not all the time.
Yeah.
I always tell them between 6:30 and 6:30, you know, I may be an asshole, but at 6:31 or 6:50 or 6:29 in the morning, I'm going to rub your head and love you. So most of these guys, I'll do anything for us. They call me when they get out of here. I'll be there, you know. So I don't know, just showing them that respect and getting that respect from them. So,
well, I guess to wrap up here, what advice do you have for young bucks looking to get after it?
Bust your ass.
I've
been so lucky to always ask for more. I remember when I first come here, I told Dylan, I was like, I'm not always going to be on the job. I'm going to move up, whether it's here or somewhere else. Well, he gave me an opportunity to move up. But what he showed me is and taught me is that it's not always greener on the other side, whether I try to leave or whatever. But if you bust your ass, no matter what you do, and I always tell people when you see something going wrong, or, you know, if you got an issue, telling somebody and moving forward with that, man, it'll always shake out for you. I've got a guy right now that's working for me. He doesn't know a whole lot, but he busts his ass every day. And you give him 5 years, he'll be somewhere. He'll be somewhere. So that's my whole mentality. Bust your ass every day. Do right by the company, and they'll do right by you. So
yeah. And ask for the opportunity when the time's right.
That's it. Yeah. Ask for the opportunity. I ask for the opportunity all the time.
Yeah.
That was my biggest deal. So
yeah, and that's, again, I've told people that so many times. Like, they're not going to just reach out and give it to you.
Not at all.
You got to earn the respect first and then ask for it.
Yes.
And they'll give you the chance.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. So bust your ass and pester the shit out of them, and it'll happen, I promise.
There you go.
It'll happen. I remember telling somebody, we had a foreman one day that called out sick or whatever, and they was like, all right, Brett, you want to run the crew today? You can run the crew. And I was like, oh, shit, here we go.
Yeah.
You know, so I got out there, and I busted my ass, and I think I whooped his production all day long, you know. And at the end of the day, you know, it was only like 3 or 4 weeks later, they offered me a foreman's job. And it was after one dude called out sick, you know.
Yeah.
And I just got the opportunity. And when I took that opportunity, I ran with it. So my advice is bust your ass, whether you're owning your own business or running your own job or, you know, superintendent or estimating or project manager, just bust your ass at whatever you do. And
you
it'll
got a shovel.
It'll fall
again.
Yeah. I bust my ass shoveling tracks every evening.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah.
It's all part of it.
So, all right, man. Well, I guess I'll let you get back to your fucked up storm drain line
over
there.
Well, yeah. I appreciate it. This was awesome.
Yeah,
so
thanks for shooting the shit with me.
I'll get back over there.
Hopefully the audio is not too screwed up,
because
this is the first time I've ever done it in the field. And then I might go get on a hoe and mess around a little bit.
Come on.
Or the dozer. I need some therapy time.
I need some stuff done. So,
well, I don't know if I'll actually do anything, but
that's all right.
I'll do something. I don't know if it'll be worth anything.
Do something.
Yeah.
It'll be fine.
Yeah.
So,
okay. All right, man. I appreciate it.
Appreciate you, man.
Okay, everybody. I hope that was a good time for you. I hope that was time well spent. If it was, if there was something that had you going, aha, or, oh man, Jimmy needs to hear this one, send it to Jimmy. Even if he doesn't have a smartphone, maybe play it for him on yours. Just somehow share the podcast. That's all I ask. I just spent my morning doing this, and I have a lot of other things to do. I'm not saying I wouldn't do it if no one was listening or sharing it, but it's a huge help. I'm trying to deliver as much value as possible, trying to get these stories out there to as many individuals as possible, and I cannot do it without your help. So please share it, and I will see you on the next one. Stay dirty out there.